Yeah.
Wake up, America.
Wake up, America!
Wake up, America.
It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in.
Yep, this is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Freedom Fiends After Dark. Actually, it's going to be rebranded the Freedom Fiends After Dark on June 9th. But in the meantime, it's just the Freedom Fiends After Dark. It's really going to be rebranded as the Freedom Fiends, because the show is 7 nights a week now. Seven days a week, 7 nights, 7 slots a week. And tonight, on the other end of the line, we have, I am the gonzo journalist of talk radio, so I always travel with my attorney. We got Randy England, Esquire. How you doing, Randy?
Hey, it's Tuesday morning here in Missouri.
Cool, man. Cool. And you used to be a former prosecutor, aren't you?
Yes, I was once a much nastier
filthy
person.
Filthy job. So, yeah, that's a little bit of expertise that he comes from, but really we just like to shoot the breeze and talk about fun stuff and liberty. And but you know, there's if we have legal issues, Randy can speak to them. And not in a, not in one of those magic words kind of ways, in the real kind of way, you know, in the fake real kind of way, the real kind of way that the fake, I don't even know what I'm saying. I guess I'm saying courts are dumb. The legal system is dumb. It's not good. It could be done better. It could be done privately, but it's real because it's backed by guns, but it's fake. It's fake as a $3 plastic fiat bill. Randy, how's the weather there in Missouri?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's about 74 degrees. I can't beat it. It's very nice.
I got the window open.
Yeah, I do too. But I don't have the fan on because it's just about right.
It's noisy too, the fan.
You know, Michael, your advice is worth just about what you pay for it.
What's my advice?
Your legal advice from me.
Yeah, and you're not my attorney. I know the difference between saying someone is my attorney. But I could PayPal you a dollar and hire you for the night.
That would be fine.
If you accepted it. Do you have a PayPal account?
I do.
Cool.
I do.
I mean, not PayPal, Bitcoin.
Yeah, but I lost my wallet.
Did you have any Bitcoin in it?
I had a bit nickel in it.
What's a bit nickel? A 20th of a Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Okay. That's enough to buy lunch now in a pretty nice restaurant, maybe.
It was given to me for free several years ago just for signing up for Bitcoin. Some guy was giving out a bit nickel back when a Bitcoin wasn't even worth a dollar, and I got one.
Wow. I've never heard that term, bit nickel. I like it. Makes sense. We had a little trouble with the central scrutinizer here getting on the radio. It was kind of touch and go, and we actually, you know, usually we get on about 5 minutes early with the network and connect, and everything's all good, but we couldn't hear anything. I don't know if it was my end, their end, probably in the middle. It's probably a man in the middle, you know, NSA attack on free speech. If it's not, I'll just blame the government anyway, because in some way, it's the government's fault, because if it weren't for the government, we'd all be driving around in flying cars with our own satellites. And all have our own 50 gazillion watt radio stations in the form of some technology that doesn't even exist yet. I believe that. Do you believe that?
I do. And, you know, Michael, don't sell yourself short. You got us on, what was it, with 5 seconds to spare?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was kind of, I impressed myself. It was very pro. I thought it was very pro. You know, jiggling cables, looking for to see if cats have stepped on mute buttons on the mixer, things like that. And, you know, almost cussing as much as you can when you're connected to a radio network. And then finally, like 5 seconds before the show started,
I thought we were really in trouble when you started to cry.
I didn't cry, but I did the equivalent of crying on the radio, which is I told the board op to queue up a previous episode in case we couldn't get on.
That's yes,
the
equivalent. You did.
So I'm looking at this site, stopfreekeen.com. Have you heard of these people?
I've heard of
You've heard of them?
Stop Free King, but I never had the pleasure of going to their site.
Yeah.
They apparently don't like Free King.
Yeah, they're people from Keene who don't like the Free Keeners who want less taxes and more freedom. So I guess they're people who want more taxes and less freedom because they're really adamant about the Free Keener people, and they go to their picnics and stand around with signs in silent protest like it's apartheid or something. And yeah, they've gotten into some really nasty pod beefs with Ian Freeman and his friends. They really don't like the Robin Hooding where they put a nickel in the parking meter to save people from a parking ticket. And they don't like them chalking on sidewalks and putting smiley faces and things like that. And it's gotten pretty nasty. And it is an interesting thing. There's a post on StopFreeKeen.com called "Chris Cantwell Celebrates the Death of Police Officer, Whines About Backlash." And this rant is not about Cantwell. The rant is about the fact that at the bottom of this post, below the Chris Cantwell video, the Stop Free Keen people put a JPEG image of the cover of my DVD, Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, which is kind of weird because I've never met Cantwell. I've never been to Keene. I don't have a dog in this fight, man. And they've decided somehow, I guess their whole thing is like, they like to pick on the idea of the non-aggression principle. They say it's bad or something, or that people don't adhere to it, or that talking about self-defense is not adhering to it. And this video with Chris Cantwell is him, talking about a cop who was called to a 911 call at an old folks home in New Hampshire. And I don't know the whole story. I don't know what happened, but the cop got shot and Cantwell was celebrating it. And somehow, they decided that the Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle DVD by Michael W. Dean and Jared Waltz training for shooting cops. It's not. I don't even know what they're going for, man. But yeah, somehow they've lumped me into their list of enemies. You know, like Stop Free Keen has a list of enemies, kind of like Richard Nixon did, except Richard Nixon could probably actually do something about his enemies list.
Yeah, but at least it's not your picture on the cover. Jared Waltz's face is right there.
Oh yeah, I just made this happen. He does all of the presenting in it. He does the gun. I'm not qualified to teach gun training, and I'm not talking about certification. He is both certified and qualified to teach gun training, and I certainly would have done this with him if he was not certified, just because he's so qualified. But I just thought it'd be a good idea. And I was going to do a whole series of these, but I got so busy with radio. People keep asking me, where's volume 2? And they say, this is the greatest gun training video ever. If you look at the reviews on Amazon, there's, you know, 20, 25, something like that, reviews of it. They're all glowing. They're all 5-star reviews. And, you know, a lot of them are people who've had a lot of gun training who say it's a great refresher course. It's a great beginning and intermediate video. And you can get Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle on Amazon or through the Freedom Fiend site. There's a link over on the right. Or you can actually get it free by torrenting. You can get a DVD ISO, which is a perfect DVD copy, by torrenting and seeding the Freedom Fiends. If you go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link that says Torrent Club. It's a new link I put up that has a little picture of the BitTorrent symbol with a halo on it, because you are angelic in my eyes if you torrent the Freedom Fiends and help keep us drone proof. So, yeah. So what do you think of all this and the fact that they somehow thought I had something to do with Free Keene? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the putting your picture or his picture and your name and his name in there makes it look like, well, if there's any bloodshed, further bloodshed, it's on your head.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting, too, because Jared Waltz is a Free State Wyoming guy who, you know, back when they were deciding whether to have the Free State Project in Wyoming or New Hampshire, he voted for Wyoming and moved to Wyoming. I think he's actually from Wyoming, but yeah, he's not a Free State. He's got nothing to do with, I don't even know if he's ever been in New Hampshire. I've been in New Hampshire, but not last time I was in New Hampshire was well before the existence of the Free State Project. I used to go there as a teenager in the summer because my sister lived there. So you were going to say?
Well, I'm not sure. I was going to say, you know, one of the biggest problem, you know, you read about these things. It happens that police officers end up getting shot and even killed on raids. I remember when I was a
prosecutor. I can hear you scrolling. I can hear the scrolling wheel. A little bit of behind the scenes radio here. That is the scrolling wheel. Yes.
Anyway, go on. Mea culpa from my end.
Go on.
What I was going to say is that police, I, when I was a prosecutor, police would come to me all the time, and they would want, the one thing that they seemed to like, and I could never understand it, was they wanted a no-knock warrant.
Ugh.
And, you know, I'm thinking, no-knock. I mean, I always refused it. I figured the only way you could justify a no-knock warrant is if there was some innocent person in there about to be killed or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you don't go, no-knock warrant for drugs? I mean, this is ridiculous.
It's to keep them from flushing evidence. That's the idea behind it. But I think it's just turned into they like to terrorize people and be thought of as someone scary.
You know, but the thing is, though, it's dangerous to cops, too. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of people that end up getting no-knock warrant searches on them are, you know, extremes. They're either the grandmother in the wrong house because someone transposed two numbers because they're dyslexic and work for the police. Or there's somebody with two strikes who is willing to kill and die to not go back to prison. Or, you know, there's someone who doesn't have any idea at all that someone's going to be coming through their door and shoots because they don't know it's the cops. Because, you know, I'm from L.A., and in L.A., it's extremely common in home invasions for the, you know, the gang members kicking in the door to yell police when they come through the door.
Yeah. Hey, you know what I just said? I think I said that wrong. You know, you don't even need a warrant if somebody's about to be killed inside.
Yeah, it's an exigent circumstance.
Exactly. So, but it would certainly have to be some close to exigency that you would need to do that. And keeping drugs from going down a toilet is not a good enough reason for anybody to risk being shot, even if you're a cop.
Yeah. If I were a cop, and God willing, I never would be. If I were a cop, I would be totally against the war on drugs, even if I was really against drugs, because as a cop, I wouldn't want to have to risk my life to enforce something that some goon politician scribbled down on paper. There's no reason for it. So when you were a prosecutor, what was your involvement in warrants? I thought judges issue warrants.
No, the prosecutors always write the warrants. Judges just sign them.
Ah.
Sometimes cops write them, but prosecutors in our county have to okay them, at least.
Do cops ever write them and sign them?
I never let cops write them for me.
Okay, we'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, the invigorating alternative to those other late-night shows.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
This is the Freedom Fiends. And we're talking with Randy England, and we're talking about cops who get shot for being places they shouldn't be. So, Randy, you know, a lot of times when we're doing a show, when you and I are doing a show, now that Nima's gone and I have, you know, it takes a village to replace Nima Vedati. So I have 10 co-hosts now on this show. And I always have the co-hosts send me a list the day, you know, 12 hours or so before the show of like 5 show ideas. And we usually pick, you know, I pick 2 that I like, and then we never end up talking about any of them, and we just randomly riff on things, but have them there in case we need them and occasionally use them. And one of your suggestions is always, what would law look like in LibPair or Libertarian Paradise? And I love that topic, and I think we should continue over years to talk about that topic. But what we never talk about, which you have experience in, is how law works now, because you're a criminal defense attorney in Missouri, and you were a state prosecutor in Missouri back when you were a bad man, and now you're a good man, and you've changed your ways and seen the light, and you know, like all those old I once was lost but now and was blind but now I see songs. So how did you stop being a prosecutor, and how did you become a libertarian, and were they connected?
Well, they were connected. The funny thing was, now most of the things that I did when I was a prosecutor were not bad guy things. I mean, I tried murderers that killed people and thieves that stole from people and lots of stuff like that. But we also had drug offenders, which...
Yeah, you can't pick and choose, right?
And no, you can't. And if you tried, you would probably be out of the business. Although... it was fun. As I went on, I did this for 14 years. As time went on, I got to do more of the serious cases that actually had victims, and that was more to my liking. But even up till the end, there were still the drug cases in that, and it wasn't a libertarian instinct that really got to me on that, but it was the futility of it, that it just wasn't doing any good, that the people that were going to jail because of their conviction, and my convicted them, it wasn't doing anybody any good. They hadn't hurt anybody, of course. And I would have things like, well, I don't want these drugs being sold to our kids and things like that. And I bought into that. And but it ended up seeming like it was useless. And I could say I was becoming more and more libertarian. When I finally was getting ready to leave, I was thinking it was time to go. And I really didn't want to do this anymore. And then it was back, I guess it was 2006. I was an assistant prosecutor in the county that I'm in. And our elected prosecutor, he lost his primary. And I said, boy, this stuff. There will never, no, well, sorry, now that's bad for an assistant prosecutor, because that means you have to break in a new politician for the job. And nobody wants to do that. And I'd been thinking it's time to go. And when that happened, I said, it's time to go, because I'm not breaking in some turkey to do this, you know, to come in and boss around the people that are doing the actual work. And so it was time to go, and I got out, and I was really glad that I did. And it was about the same time I was finally coming to the last thing to being a libertarian, that was the drug war is useless. And I became convinced of that because I was a prosecutor. I saw that it was worthless. I didn't just read it.
Were you reading stuff also, libertarian stuff, or listening to radio or videos or anything?
Oh, I was a fan of Ron Paul going back to the 80s. I knew what he was about, and guys like Joseph Sobrin, who became a complete anarchist, I would say, before he died, in the mid-2000s. And reading more and more about them, my faith in government had dropped to zero.
Yeah.
And where it still stands. Yeah. I mean, maybe it can be in the negative numbers, but let's just say zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was really time to go, and I'm glad that I got out. I'm hoping that if we ever get to the libertarian paradise, as we say, libpair, that I'll be forgiven. Yeah. I'm trying to do my bit.
Well, you know, my idea is that in the Nuremberg trials for drug warriors, if you repented before libpair happened, you get out of it. You don't have to do it. And, you know, I don't think there should be Nuremberg drug, you know, I don't see, like, oh, my cats are fighting. You can hear them. one of our cats has to get dental surgery tomorrow, so nobody's getting any food for 12 for tonight, and they're all missing their food bowl and going, and it makes them
my
fight.
My condolences.
Yeah, and me too, because I'm going in for blood tests, so we're all starving together. We'll be okay. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Have you ever wanted to move to the land of libpair? Libertarian paradise, where there's fun for everyone that doesn't initiate force on others, fun for the kids, parties for the adults, buy and sell in silver or Bitcoin, scenic hikes and gun shoots, speeches to educate us all. The Porcupine Freedom Festival is libpair in the White Mountains of New Hampshire for a week this summer, June 22nd to 29th. Get your tickets now before there's no more room. Porkfest, the event of a lifetime. Porkfest.com. That's PORCFEST.com.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to
torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to
torrent Fiends archives.
Do not go to freedomfiends.com
and click on the torrent
link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to
freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link
and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
This is
Freedom Fiends. And it's After Dark, and I'm Michael Dean, and we are talking with Randy England, my friend, and my friend Randy England. You can go to randyengland.com, or you can go to freeisbeautiful.net. Is that your book site?
That is my book site.
Yep. He wrote a book called Why Catholics Should Be Libertarian, Free is Beautiful. And we're talking about his sordid past as a state prosecutor, and how he saw the light and became an ANCAP libertarian and quit working for the man and started defending people from the man. Tell me a little bit more about your journey to liberty.
Well, you know, of course, when I did quit the prosecutor's office, I had to decide what I was going to do, you know, in law after that. And I figured there were two powerful reasons why I should just do criminal defense work. And one was, it was the only thing that I could do without having to crack a book open. And I found out that wasn't completely true, but it was largely true. And the other thing was, it's the only thing that I can do in law where every single case is against the state. Kind of like that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, you know, whenever statist people hear someone saying that they're against the state, they get all horrified. But, you know, if they ever get arrested, they're going to have to hire an attorney who is against the state for them.
And one who is willing to play by the state's rules, of course. I think you said something earlier about I don't use the magic words in that. It's funny, though. I get calls from people. People figure out from just reading my website, or maybe they'll go over to my libertarian site, which would totally give it away. But if you read the website, you get the idea that I'm not happy with the government and they should leave people alone. And so people call me up, and there are some people who are libertarians or what do you call some other people? What do they call themselves?
Statists. Sovereigns. Oh, the sovereign
citizens.
No. Yeah.
Sovereign citizens, that sort of thing. And they call me and they want to hire a sovereign citizen or a libertarian lawyer or something like that and expect me to have the magic words, how I could file a lien in the recorder's office and get them out of having to have a license plate or something completely crazy like that. And those things never, ever work.
Well, I think they do like 1 out of 1,000 times because of, you know, some clerk doesn't know what they're doing and someone happens to be running a video camera at that time. And then that's offered as proof of it always works. And then people keep ruining their lives trying to do it.
You don't see what happened the next time that person got called to court, perhaps after the warrant was issued.
Yeah, or, you know, you can't talk to the client of the sovereign attorney because, you know, he's in federal prison.
That's right. That's right. I hear about how somebody's name is in all capitals, and so the charging document must be defective. And I mean, I've even tried to read some of that stuff just out of curiosity, and I still can't figure it out. I just do not understand it. But further, it doesn't matter because I've never met a judge who could understand it. I remember one time we had a circuit judge. I was in his chambers doing something or other, having him sign something, and in comes the clerk from the recorder's office saying they had some sovereign citizen who wanted to file, I think it was a lien, against the judge's property. And the judge just said, oh, they said, do we have to take it? And the judge says, no, you don't have to take it. And they just didn't take it. That was the end of it. And if there's nothing they could do about it. Of course, it wasn't. I don't know that it was valid in any way.
If only it were so simple as to use magic words to make the state go away.
Yeah, I don't doubt that there's some theory behind some of these ideas. I mean, out there somewhere, there's some reason why if you have a fringe on your flag, it's not a valid courtroom and it's not a valid judge.
Yeah, it's a court of admiralty or something.
But so they say. And I don't completely understand that. But even if there is some analytical validity to that. Nobody out there who's going to put you in a jail cell gets that. No attorney can argue that and have it go anywhere, so you're going to end up in that cell anyway.
Yeah.
And that should only happen if a person comes to you. I mean, I do have some people come to me and they say, this is wrong, I want to make a point of it, and I want to fight this. And I'm fine with that. You know, I'll tell them straight like it is. I said, I don't tell my clients what to do anyway. I tell them, if you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this will probably happen. Or if you do this, this will happen. What do you want to do? And if I say, and if we go to trial on this and use these arguments and show this evidence, you'll probably be convicted. What do you want to do? And if they want to go to trial, I'm okay with it, as long as they know that they could go to jail. And if they do go to jail, they'll go to jail for longer than if they hadn't put on this ridiculous defense, that sort of thing. That wasn't going to work. If they want to make a point, I mean, that's fine. Let them make a point.
Yeah. So back to the cops kicking in doors and risking their lives for stupid politicians writing things down on paper. And, you know, there's a lot of activism out there, and some of it is more meaningful to me than others. And some that I really like is Kokesh. You know, I think he's done some silly things too. I think I thought he was pretty brave for cocking the shotgun in D.C., but I'm not surprised he went to jail for it. And
no kidding.
You know, I'm glad he's out. But the stuff I really like by him the best is when he goes up to cops or soldiers and asks them about, you know, what they do. You know, he'll go up to Marines and ask them if they would violate the Constitution to follow orders and, you know, confiscate guns from U.S. citizens and things like that. And I like when he goes up to cops and asks them, you know, would you obey any law? You know, if ketchup were outlawed, would you enforce it? You know, and then takes it all the way to, like, you know, would you throw Jews in a cage, you know, and to a concentration camp? And surprisingly, you know, like, basically what it looks like he's discovered from a random sampling or semi-random sampling is that, like, two out of three cops at least will obey any law, and maybe more than that, but at least, you know, maybe a third one on camera won't admit to it. But when World War II was over, they had international courts in Nuremberg for some of the Nazi collaborators and, you know, sentenced them to prison or death or whatever. And, you know, there was no making good of the victims. It was just a punishment. But a lot of people were happy about it. And I kind of like the idea of it. And an interesting thing that came out of it was a lot of them responded, I was just following orders, which is what a lot of cops say today when they do horrible things. And a lot of soldiers do. The interesting thing, though, about the Nuremberg trials is there's questions as to whether they were legal, because they were trying people after the laws were changed at the end of the war. The victors were trying the losers under new laws.
It's called an ex post facto law, and they're illegal everywhere except
international.
Well, no, they're illegal when you have a big war and then one side wins and wants to go after the other side. Now, that's a legal standpoint. I mean, if you murder 10 million people, most people don't seem to have a problem with the idea that you should die. I don't have much trouble with that either.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, that's kind of a basic thing that you would have in any libertarian society, that you hurt people, you're going to be punished, and you don't even need a written law to tell you that, because your mama told you that 50 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, I joke, I created this term Nuremberg trials for drug warriors. It was the name of a Freedom Fiends episode about 3 years ago. And Nima and I conjectured on the idea for a while. And, you know, lately I've kind of mellowed in my thoughts. I'm not thinking these people should be lined up with a firing squad. And the conclusion I came to last night with Davy Barker is that they should have to build the roads for the rest of their life. You know, people always say, who would build the roads? And my answer is the former drug warriors would have to do it for no paycheck for the rest of their lives.
Well, I thought the government was already building the roads. Well, I didn't say that they had to be killed. I was just saying, if that's what you wanted to do, I wouldn't have any trouble with it.
Yeah.
There's a difference. I I'm not sure I'd be up for pulling the trigger except in self-defense.
No, I would never pull a trigger except in self-defense. I'm a peace-loving, I'm a hippie with a gun, man. I'm a hippie with a bunch of guns.
The police officers who were willing to obey any law might say that I'm not a peace officer, I'm a law enforcement officer.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm here for.
Yep.
They don't make the laws.
Yeah. I say hippie with a gun. That's a description I've come up with for myself, and it sounds new and unusual and weird and kind of accurate to me, but I think that phrase would have made sense in the 60s and would have scared the heck out of most God-fearing, you know, voting, taxpaying citizens. Hippies with guns, they probably picture Abby Hoffman or something, but that's not me. That guy was a commie, and he was into violence that was not self-defense. He was not into gun training with the non-aggression principle. He was into, doing really crazy violent things, or at least telling people how to do it.
Is he the one that wrote Steal This Book?
He wrote Steal This Book. I love the title of that book.
Well, I don't know if he was for government or not. You know, when this person is, you know, a radical, you don't know if what they mean is that they want to take down the existing government and give themselves the whip, or if they want everybody to be free.
Well, that's always the situation. And, you know, Nima Vedati coined a phrase that I think is awesome and love. I love repeating it. And it's that the radicals become the conservatives the day after the revolution. And I think that a lot of people who become leaders in movements towards leaderless society would immediately become the leaders when it happens. And that happened, you know, in most communist revolutions. And Abby Hoffman was pretty much a communist. I think he was first and foremost anti-war. I think that was his biggest thing. And that book was written during the Vietnam War. And it made a lot of sense. And I have respect for that. But he was also, you know, he was conflating capitalism with communism. I mean, with corporatism. He didn't like business, you know, and thought everybody should be equalized by stealing from everybody and giving to everybody. And yeah, man, I don't like that. We'll be back on Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And I'm speaking directly to you. Yes, you.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon. And Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Greetings, fellow humans. This is Michael Dean. It's After Dark. This is the Freedom Fiends. We're talking to Randy England, attorney, author, former prosecutor, but then he became a good guy. So, Randy, your state, Missouri, is that the state that passed a law that basically said if a cop is entering your home illegally, it's okay to shoot in self-defense?
No, our state doesn't have a law exactly like that. We have something that I think they called it the Castle Doctrine, and I don't have the statute in front of me. And it when it was coming out, it was real, how would you say, controversial, and it got publicity around the country at the time. But in the end, they still had and it allowed someone to use deadly force, as they'd say, against any intruder on your real property, like your home or your office, and even I think in Missouri, even in your car, if someone was trying to get in after you, and you'd be allowed to shoot them, didn't have a duty to retreat, some things like that. But in the end, they left a provision in the law that said your behavior must still be reasonable. And the truth is, once you put that provision, man, it's totally subjective. And I mean, I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I have a problem with somebody who would just execute somebody who they knew was not any kind of a threat to them.
Yeah.
But that happens. If you know, it's a situation where if you came in and you saw somebody stuck in your window. And you saw them stuck in the window, and they didn't have a weapon, and you went and got a gun and shot them. Well, that's not reasonable. So I don't know what you would have such a law say that would actually make it okay, because are they aggressing against you? Sure. Are they committing a crime? Sure. But you don't shoot the little girl for chasing a ball into your yard. And I'm not sure you just shoot anybody under any circumstances that you'd find in your house. I don't know where we go with that, but it's a real question, and it's not that easy.
Yeah, the thing I don't like about the, what was the wording? It must be reasonable.
There was some wording along those lines.
I mean, the thing is, like, a self-defense scenario is an unreasonable situation to begin with. You know, it is an exigent circumstance. It is something that is very few people find themselves in. Everybody who's, you know, wise hopes they never find themselves in. People who are smart prepare themselves to deal with if they find themselves in. But there's nothing reasonable about the situation. It would, for most people, you know, for people that have never been to war, it would probably be the most extreme moment of their life, any way you look at it.
And it's actually, I should say, it's their fear that has to be reasonable.
Okay. And that is so subjective, too. I mean, I think that I agree that I wouldn't shoot somebody just for being in my house. You know, if it was afternoon and somebody walked in and, you know, were drunk and I could tell they were probably in the wrong house, I would probably be pointing a gun at them, but I probably wouldn't be shooting them. If I woke up in the middle of the night and there was somebody in my house, it would probably be a different story. If I woke up anytime, if I encountered anybody in my home anytime and they were armed, obviously armed, I would probably shoot them in self-defense. If they were, you know, there's so many variables and it would have to be decided on the moment. And people who criticize people who prepare themselves for self-defense, one of the things they criticize is that they say they fantasize about shooting somebody. And I do not. I envision scenarios and possibilities and work them through in my head.
And it's horrifying. What it is.
Yeah. People who have what's, you know, considered a clean shoot, like they're in a life and death situation in their property or even not on their property and shoot someone in self-defense, you know, if they're a reasonable human being, that's going to haunt them for a long time, if not the rest of their life, even if they don't end up in jail and don't end up getting sued. It's not something that's going to make them happy, hopefully.
Oh, I agree with that.
So it's, yeah, but reasonable fear, man. We'll be back. Dean After
Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow
worms. I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
The stato sperimentato.
The United States government presents
no vision.
Congrats. Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Estos por su parte consideran
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, this is Squisclar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, cool cats and kitty girls. This is Michael Dean, and I have sentenced myself to 7 nights a week of doing radio. It's a good thing. Sometimes it's kind of hard, though. If you want to donate or help out, you can go to freedomfiends.com. You can buy ads from us. We got some ads we sell. We're actually selling some ads now, but we'd like to sell some more. And really, the thing that helps out the most is torrenting and seeding us to keep us alive in perpetuity, to keep our thoughts and words out there, our thoughts, words, and non-prayers to the state out there. Because every time you seed, the state dies a little bit more. And the state is just a big bully with a bunch of guns. They cheat. They have guns. They, they couldn't get the stuff done without the guns. And they're ordering more guns. The USDA just ordered a bunch of submachine guns. And, you know, the people that, I guess cows get angry when you regulate them. It's more like probably they're afraid that farmers get angry after what happened in Nevada with that standoff. Anything that has to do with agriculture, they're going to arm those people like a South American dictatorship militia death squad. And that's what bureaucrats are these days. And, you know, we were talking about Nuremberg trials for drug warriors, and I think that's going to be the name of this episode. I'm going to make it clear that Randy doesn't necessarily agree with that, but this is my idea. And really, I don't want them to end in firing squads. I want them to end in those people working off their debt for the rest of their lives to the people that they've harmed. And it may take many lifetimes. We may have to transmute them to the blockchain and use the singularity to keep them alive so they can serve their 20 consecutive life terms, making amends to all the cool little hippies and stoners and, grandmas with cancer and people they harmed with their just horrible behavior.
What do you think? How do you think you would, since you couldn't let them out because they're monsters, how would you make them work?
Chain gangs, man. I mean, it's what they've done forever.
If you just dragged them out and they just laid down on the ground, if they wouldn't work.
They're fond of tasers. I know that.
That would be a motivator. An electronic attitude adjustment.
Yeah, maybe a shock collar. Or maybe just libertarian reindoctrination camps where you lock them in a room and make them listen to Freedom Fiends and Ben Stone the Bad Quaker on an infinite loop. Because governments like doing that too. They like, they say it's not torture. They put people in a room and they blast loud music and flash loud lights on them. And, we wouldn't probably have the flashing lights. We would just, and it wouldn't even be that loud. We would just have the Freedom Fiends and Ben Stone the Bad Quaker and a few other podcasts and radio shows. Free Talk Live, playing on a loop, playing on an endless loop.
You would force them to listen to this show.
Yeah, I'm joking, by the way, but I could see someone doing that. Wouldn't be me. I'm peaceful.
They wouldn't want to hear me. When my kids all grew up, they all left.
Well, isn't that what you want them to do? Isn't that good parenting?
Well, yeah, but their mother took it personally.
They didn't leave and burn down the house. They just left, right?
That's right, and they left the car, so it was all right.
There you go. That's good parenting, man.
I shouldn't joke about them. They're all listening. All great kids. They're not even kids anymore. Some of them, maybe. I don't know.
Do they know that you you're a radio co-host?
Oh, they put up with me
on one radio station on the border of Illinois and Kentucky.
Yeah, several of them are fairly libertarian too. So I've talked to them and had them straighten me out on some things from time to time.
Cool, man. Yeah, Ben Stone and Bill Buepert, two of my favorite libertarian yakkers and writers, both of them were minarchists their whole life and raised their kids, to believe in small government and believe the government's bad and you should have as little as possible. And both of them were turned to full-on ANCAP by their kids. Like, they taught their kids well, and their kids took it further and then brought their dads there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so you don't have to think up all the good ideas for yourself.
Yeah, my wife and I have kind of done that to each other. We've kind of been in our journey to liberty, basically, which started, it started when we were born. But, her dad gave her, Moon is a Harsh Mistress for her 11th birthday, the Heinlein book. But, yeah, we really started thinking about it on a daily basis.
about a year into our marriage. We've been married for 8 years, and about, you know, at about 7 years, we started thinking about it all the time. And the whole time, we've kind of been neck and neck in our path to liberty. And sometimes one of us is a little ahead of the other, until we were both finally all the way there. It was good. It was a good thing. So you were talking about, some guy you like, RJ Rummel. I don't really know who he is, but he died, and you want to, you've not come here to bury him, but you've come to praise him.
Well, for a prelude to that, you know, when people complain about libertarianism, you know, it seems like one of the biggest complaints is that liberty would not fix, you know, problem X or problem Y. And they don't ever stop to think that governments everywhere are doing a lousy job with problem X and problem Y anyway. And libertarians, and I mean, we try to explain ideas about how this could work or how this would be better, but we don't really know. I mean, there's going to be problems in any human society. But when you look at some things, like what's wrong with, you know, governments now, and the problem is, look at the evil things that they do, and there's nothing that they do that's more evil. I mean, the award has to go to flat-out murder. I mean, that's the gold standard for evil. And when you look at what people do, we've got people like Jeffrey Dahmer, and, you know, I mean, he murdered 17 people, and John Wayne Gacy and Ted Bundy and these famous serial killers. And these guys, they're not even in triple digits. And as bad as they are, it's like they're amateurs compared to governments.
Yeah, I'm noticing here this. I'm reading about R.J. Rummel or Rudolph Rummel. I wasn't aware of this guy, and I'm not glad he died. I'm glad you told me about him because I'm finally reading about him. He coined the term democide, which is an awesome term that libertarians throw around all the time. It means, you know, murder by government. So go on. Talking about democide statistics.
You have to limit it even more. You know, in World War, I mean, in the 20th century, I mean, I think 50 million people were killed in war, in World War II, maybe 10 million in World War I, and there's been dozens of wars that have killed a million people or more. But I'm not talking about killing people that have guns that are shooting back at you. What he's talking about, this democide thing, he's talking about killing unarmed people.
Yeah. He's a very distinguished looking man. He kind of looks like, I think people should do memes of this guy and keep him alive in the social medias or, you know, I've never heard of him too. And I know a lot about a lot of libertarian OG libertarians, and I should know this guy. He kind of looks like the guy in those beer commercials of the most interesting man in the world.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He was a professor, emeritus. How do you say that word? Emeritus. Professor.
Emeritus?
Emeritus. Thank you.
That means old.
Old? Okay, he was an old professor of political science at the University of Hawaii.
So he's not only
a libertarian, he was smart enough to be a libertarian professor at a place with really nice weather.
Now, I don't know that he was exactly a libertarian. I think he kind of favored more toward Democratic Republic documents. Here's one of the things he's also famous for, besides figuring out how many unarmed people governments have killed, was this idea that democracies never go to war with one another.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure if that's completely true, but it's largely true.
I would say that Nazi Germany was a democracy.
Maybe not by the time they went to war.
Yeah, because Hitler ousted a bunch of people in their equivalent of their Congress who would have voted against him. So, yeah.
So he had some theories
but he was democratically elected.
But the other thing that he figured out, and this is sort of intuitive, is that the more totalitarian the government is, the more people they kill, and the freer they are, the more liberty there is, the fewer innocent people they kill.
I don't know about that. Do you believe that?
Oh, sure, sure. Look, the numbers that he came up with, like in the 20th century, the countries that killed the most of their own citizens were like Communist China, Soviet Union, these are countries that killed 70 million, I guess 60 million people.
I guess I'm thinking of per capita. I mean, I'm sure that the United States government in one way or another has killed more of its own people than, you know, some of these tiny dictatorships in Africa.
But the numbers are much smaller. You take a country like the UK in the 20th century, they killed 116,000 people, unarmed people. And you think, well, England, that's a lot of people to kill. Well, it is, but it's not even a million. And Mao killed 77 million. And the total number that Rummel came up with, and it's been revised. I think I put in my book, it was 162 million or something. It's been revised upward. Before he died, he revised it up to 262 million unarmed people were killed by governments since the year 1900.
Yeah, I've heard that quote, and I've never heard it attributed, and it seems accurate. I like that he did the work to figure that out. I just don't like the it sounds like giving a pass to democracies to say they kill less of their people than non-democracies, because what amount of murder is okay, you know?
Well, let me give you a number that'll make you feel better. All of the colonial powers, which are mostly European, but the colonial powers, but America to be in there too, he totaled them out at 50 million during the 20th century.
Yeah.
Colonial powers basically oppressing the people in their colonies. And so that's 50 million, that's a pretty hefty number.
Yeah,
and
America,
we're in that.
America kills a lot of people that don't live in America too, either directly or by proxy or by blockades or by proxy wars or arming insurgents that the dictator du jour that they like. And the United States government has toppled a lot of democratically elected leaders. So
it's amazing. And I don't think he's even gotten to the bottom of it.
Yep. We'll be back with more about Rudolf Rummel, also known as R.J. Rummel, when we get back from his trip to the market on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
We are broadcasting into your brain on the airwaves. This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends, Michael Dean After Dark, whatever you want to call it. Call it whatever you want. Just don't call in. No, I'm kidding. You can call in on Skype if we know you, if we screened you. Yeah, we only like to put smart people on. All right, so we are talking, myself and Randy England from randyengland.com, England like the country. We're talking about R.J. Rummel, a good guy, smart guy, libertarian statist who died last week. And, you know, this guy is listed as on lists of American libertarians. And here's the thing. I mean, he was a libertarian, but he also wasn't quite past minarchist yet. Here's what I think. I think there's a lot of people who were doing the best that they could with what they had. You know, I said that recently about two people without even realizing I'd said it about the other guy a couple weeks ago. I said that about Hunter S. Thompson, and I said that about Timothy Leary, because both of them were interested in freedom. They were interested in change away from the government oligarchy systems that we have. They were interested in allowing people being allowed to do what they want to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. And they both were involved in politics. And Hunter S. Thompson ran for sheriff in his county in Colorado. And at first it started as a joke, but then he got serious about it and wanted to change some things. And he was not allowed to win. It was looking like he was going to win, but what happened was he was running independent against a Republican and a Democrat, and the Republican and Democrat got together and did a deal where one of them dropped out, and in exchange, somebody from the other party would drop out in some other race. So they basically said, you know, the Republican said, I'd rather have a Democrat win than have this lunatic Hunter S. Thompson who believes in freedom win, and vice versa. So, you know, that happened. And Timothy Leary actually did a fundraiser for Ron Paul a long time ago, like in the 90s when, you know, Ron Paul was, I think, running for re-election in Congress, or maybe it was one of his first presidential runs. You know, I believe if those guys were around today, they'd be full on no government men like Randy and I, men who just do not think we need any government, think that the market could take care of things better. And by the market, we mean people who aren't pointing guns at each other. And the thing is, the brand of anarcho-capitalist libertarianism that Randy and I and a lot of our friends practice some variation of, some flavor of, it didn't really exist until recently. I mean, there've been people, the libertarian greats, the economists, but even some of them, you know, the bow tie wearers back in the 70s, even some of them, you know, got involved in politics. And it's a pretty recent thing, you know, 5 or 10 years of people just really just saying enough, politics are stupid, forget it, you know, being full on ANCAP without being communist, like the old type of ANCOMs. And I think it's a great thing, and I think we're all standing on the shoulders of giants here. And I think some of the giants we're standing on deserve to be celebrated or at least discussed favorably, even if, you know, they're trying to do it in the context of politics. Like Harry Brown, the guy, you know, one of the founders of the Libertarian Party, like, he influenced a lot of people. Ron Paul, he's my favorite government thug, you know. He was a government thug, but I like him a lot better now that he's retired and just doing a radio show and a blog and a podcast. And he was a lot of people's path to liberty, and it's a good thing. You know, Ron Paul was kind of the gateway drug to anarcho-capitalism. And I really believe this guy, Rudolf Rummel, was one of the early movers and shakers of this. He was born in 1932, and he died March 2nd this year, you know, a couple weeks ago, or a couple months ago, at age 81. And he was a brilliant guy. He's the author of 24 scholarly books, published his major results, Understanding Conflict and War, and spent the next 15 years refining the underlying theory and testing it empirically with new data. He wrote a book called Power Kills. He wrote a book called Lethal Politics. He wrote a book called China's Bloody Century. He wrote a book called Democide, and he coined the term democide, which is frequently used. So I dig this guy, even though he was into politics and thought that that could change things. So, Randy, go.
Well, he really did us a good service, and he gave us probably the best argument to the question of what would we replace government with. I mean, so government killed 262 million people, unarmed people, not counting war, since 1900. I mean, no private entity, you know, how could they come close to that? They've never come close.
Never.
So when you ask me what will we replace the state with,
something that doesn't kill millions of people,
what would we replace the state with? I would say, does it really matter? With that fact alone, yeah, anything would be better.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Michael Dean After Dark.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations, and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. download, and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
It's Michael Dean on Freedom Fiends. And I was looking at the blog of R.J. Rummel, not to be confused with Rommel, who was a bad guy. R.J. Rummel, his blog hasn't been updated since 2009. And a lot of the posts, the images are broken image links on them, so there's no image there, which is kind of interesting. He's a great man, as Ben Stone would say, but he's already fading, and he's only been dead a couple months. So if you want to help the Freedom Fiends not pod fade after I get murdered by a government in an act of targeted democide, and they, you know, drone my whole hosting facility and everybody else on it just to get rid of my stuff, so it'll still be out there, you can torrent the Freedom Fiends torrent RSS feed and download our stuff and download new episodes as they post and have them shared with your computer running when you're not using it to be available for the world. And there's a guy who's doing that, and his name, there's a lot of people doing that, but there's a guy we got on the phone here on the Skypes, who, Nathan, you're doing that, right?
Actually, I had to turn the torrents off to make the Skype call.
Oh, of course, of course. Well, you know, have you explored the scheduler option in there? There's an option called scheduler, and basically you can set it up to not torrent during certain times. Like, basically, I have it so it will not torrent while I'm doing a show.
Yeah, I think I tried it one time, but then I realized it wasn't quite suitable for my needs. But it's a cool idea.
Yeah.
What I really wish is that it would I could set up a script so that like when my other applications demand the bandwidth, then they would get it, and then when they're all done, the torrents would get it.
I think a way I would do it is set up the script so when your mouse moves, it works. It stops torrenting. Like basically when you're using your computer.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool. I already set up my mouse so that I can hit a button and change it to left-handed.
Yeah. So what's on your mind? Murdering people? Governments murdering people?
Yeah, when Randy was talking about, y'all were kind of debating statistics there about which governments have killed more people.
Oh, I wasn't debating statistics. I was questioning R.J. Rummel's assertion that democratic governments don't kill. I guess I wasn't arguing it. I just didn't like the concept of the feather in the hat of democracies don't kill as many people as communist countries, because I mean, that's like, you know, I mean, would you be friends with a guy who said, you know, I've beaten up less women than other people have beaten up? No, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, of course. But it reminded me of a book that I read, must have been a year ago now, called King Leopold's Ghost. It was written by some, I think, a liberal journalist or maybe a Berkeley professor. And it was about this kind of the missing human rights massacre, or the first human rights I guess genocide of the 20th century that he never knew about and most people don't know about. And it happened in the Congo Free State in Africa.
The Congo Free State. Yeah. All of those, you know, when people say America, it's not a democracy, it's a republic, like that's a feather in the hat. So are all those really, really tyrannical, murder their own citizen. A lot of those countries in Africa, and a lot of them have really, fluffy names like the People's Free Democratic Republic of the Congo, things
right?
Like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Say, Nathan, who didn't know about that genocide?
Oh, the author of the book was this, I think he was a Berkeley professor named Hochschild. Basically, he was sitting on a plane reading about something, and something casually said, oh, by the way, this Belgian king killed 6 million people at the start of the century. And he was just, you know, floored because he'd never heard of this before. Have you read the novel Heart of Darkness?
The name is familiar, but
Is that the book that Apocalypse Now was based on?
I'm not sure. The book has a character who sort of does nasty things to the natives in the setting in Heart of Darkness. And it's odd that the book has kind of become a real psychological, literary kind of book that people will write long-term papers about. But the subject matter of the book is kind of obviously refers to the Congo Free State and all the horrible, you know, genocide that happened there.
Yeah, it's the book that Apocalypse Now is based on. It moves the story from the Congo to Vietnam and Cambodia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about the whole story, so for listeners who don't know, the king of Belgium decided that because the price of rubber was really high, he wanted his own, and also he wanted to be like England and France and be like the great powers of the time. So he wanted his own colony in Africa, and he also wanted to make a buck on it. So he somehow commandeered or purchased, I don't know exactly how he did it, but he carved out a little section of Africa under it for his personal domain. And then over the course of a decade or so, he proceeded to unleash basically terrorist genocide on it by sending a bunch of people in there to enslave the population and kill anyone who wouldn't work for the rubber production, I guess.
I think those Belgian Congo numbers were included under the R.J. Rummel's colonialism numbers.
Oh, they were?
Yes.
Yeah, it was really weird. He really wanted to be a colonial power, even though Belgium is this tiny country. He wanted to be like America, I guess.
Well, isn't that how also how Hawaii became an American state? It was basically the Dole, I believe it was the Dole Pineapple Company owned, you know, most of it as a banana republic, what they call, you know, a colonial territory where local corrupt politicians sell the rights to the natural resources to someone from another land to a corporation. And basically, I think the U.S. military went in and annexed it for that company, didn't they?
That sounds about right, but you know, don't quote me on that. It's interesting because it was sort of it was basically like a private state or like a, I guess I wouldn't call it a free state, but it was basically like his personal domain that he could sort of do whatever, and none of the other countries really investigated for a while or really questioned it. It only became obvious that something was wrong when a man named E.D. Morrell, who worked in a shipyard, observed that the boatloads going to Africa left with cargo full of guns and returned with cargo full of valuable rubber.
Yeah, yeah. That's governments are horrible. So what else you got?
I wanted to ask Randy a question. This is not really a private. I don't think this should reveal any private details. I was just wondering, in the legal profession that you were in, what's the career ladder like? From a prosecutor, do you really want to open your own private firm, or do you want to be a judge or a politician, or what are the options look like there?
The governor of my state, who's ran as a small government Republican, but is turning out to be a gun grabber. He was a federal attorney, which is kind of like a federal prosecutor.
Yeah, any kind of a prosecutor is a really good stepping stone to public office, any public office. I mean, many of them like to run for judge after they're prosecutors, but you go on up to higher office and the governor and all of this. To have that in their resume seems to be pretty valuable. The public digs that.
Man. Yeah, and to make clear what I said, it's not a federal attorney is not kind of a prosecutor; it is a prosecutor.
That's right.
Yeah,
yeah, they're appointed by the president, right?
Are they, Randy?
Yeah, they're called they call them U.S. attorneys. Now, the U.S. attorneys they don't try cases or prosecute anyone, but their assistant U.S. attorneys do all that work. The actual U.S. attorneys, I'm sure that they go out and talk to the press when there's a big case and
take credit for what their underlings do.
Well, all prosecutors, all elected prosecutors do that. I mean, I have some terrible stories I don't even think I would tell.
Tell one. Do tell. Do tell.
Well, I had a case one time. It was a, I was prosecuting a, it was a child sex case. And, well, not a child, teenager statutory rape case. And the case looked pretty good. And I was kind of assisting another prosecutor who was a newer prosecutor handle the case. And the other prosecutor was taking the lead on it quite a bit, but I was helping them out. And one of the things that happened in the case was is that our victims turned out to be very unsympathetic. You hate to hear jurors walking by a victim and see them smoking cigarettes and talking about how they can't wait to home to break open some whiskey. And we're talking about, you know, teenage girls. And for various reasons, the case looked like a slam dunk win. And as the case was, the jury was getting ready to come back, the elected prosecutor comes up and whispers in my ear and said, you know I asked you earlier to please talk to the press when this was over with, but don't worry about it, I'll handle it. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, I saw that coming. You see a win, so why not get out in front of it? So the jury comes back, and they come back, and they go, not guilty. And oh, my gosh. So I, of course, leave the courtroom. I don't stop to talk to the press. I was asked not to, and I get back over to my office, and 3 minutes later, I got cameras and microphones. Everybody's just beating on the door of our office. I go, what is this about? I go to the door, and they're out there, and they want to talk to somebody in the prosecutor's office to get a statement. And I said, well, you need to talk to the boss. And they said, well, the boss can't. He's consoling the victims. And I said, well, you'll have to talk to him. And I just shut the door. I thought,
was this victim even considering herself a victim? I mean, or was this like, you know, she got caught with her older boyfriend and the government intervened?
No, it was kind of a sordid case. Okay. This guy, the defendant was not an appealing person. No.
Okay.
I mean, let's put it this way. If the guy had been convicted and I was where I am today, I would not have any regret about it.
Okay.
It's enough said.
All right.
That was a good story, but the one wrinkle was the part about the smoking. I've always wondered, what's the deal with that? Like, if a juror finds out the victim drinks beer, suddenly that affects the outcome of the case?
No, the rule is you want your victims to look clean. And the other rule is you keep a close eye on your victims during a trial. You keep them away from the press. You keep them away from the jurors. Don't let them see anything that would reflect badly on the victim.
Yeah.
And that did not happen in this case.
Client control.
Well, not client, but you know.
Victim control.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more about the state's victim control.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Building the roads on the Freedom Fiends. Who will build the roads? Me.
me and my weird friends. And I got two of my weird friends on here right now, Randy England and Nathan. And they're going to talk about J.R.R. Tolkien, their favorite anarchist. And I'm going to read Rudolf Rummel's blog, because I never heard of this guy. He died, and he had a blog. And it's at www.hawaii.edu/powerkills if you want to check it out. It's pretty cool, old school, OG libertarian stuff. So go ahead, you Hobbit lovers, speak.
Well, Nathan, are you a fan of Tolkien and Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. It's one of my favorite books.
Well, me too. Particularly my favorite long book. But the thing I like about Tolkien the very most is his attitude about the state. And you pick that up even in his books. One thing I really enjoyed about The Lord of the Ring, I think in the prelude to The Lord of the Rings, Tolkien described the Hobbit society. And he said, the Shire at this time had hardly any government. Families, for the most part, managed their own affairs. The only real official in the Shire at this date was the mayor, whose only duty was to preside at banquets. That's the kind of government that you can get behind.
And don't forget that they smoked weed in the Shire, and also that when they made the movies, the director went all drug warrior on us and added in some derisive lines about smoking the leaf.
Ew.
Well, they referred to it in the book as pipe weed and left it at that, though, to be fair.
In the movies, they actually had the dark wizard guy tell Gandalf, clearly your mind has been shattered, or clearly your mind has been weakened by smoking the pipe weed.
In the movie, you're right about that. And another thing that he has in the book is that even when the king shows up at the end, the king is just this good guy who only enforced the old laws that were just, and for the hobbits and the Shire, he never wanted anything. If a bad guy was going to come and invade you, he'd help you out, but he never wanted any money from you. He lived a long way off and didn't meddle in their affairs at all. Not that I want a king, but if I had one, I'd want that for my king.
That's the interesting thing, is that Tolkien kind of comes across as a monarchist in a lot of ways, because it's all about this king with a birthright, and he's descended from blood and yada yada. But you could make a case for libertarian monarchy, I've sometimes heard.
Tolkien said that. He wrote a letter to his son where he said, my political opinions lean more and more to anarchy, philosophically understood, meaning the abolition of control, not whiskered men with bombs. So he was afraid of
the I'm reading the quote right now, and I like that he says, abolition of control, not whiskered men with bombs.
But he goes on to say that he leans more toward anarchy, but then his second choice is unconstitutional monarchy. So you're right, he is okay with, if you had a king, if the king would leave you alone. But he went on to say that, he said, the most improper job of any man, even saints, is bossing other men. Not one in a million is fit for it, at least all of those who seek the opportunity. And I don't know how you say it any better than that. I mean, if not one in a million is fit to rule other people, then that would disqualify, most of our federal government alone, or at least half of our federal government. If there's 2 million in there, they're not qualified.
Are there 2 million employees of the federal government?
I'm not sure how many there are.
That's horrifying.
But getting back to the story, one of the scariest things about the bad guy, or I guess the Dark Lord, I mean, you read a lot of derivative fiction where there's a Dark Lord with shadows and, he's got bat wings and dark servants and all that junk. But in Tolkien, he really stresses the thing that makes him scary, which is that his pure and, unbridled focus is on dominating all life. And they even said that in the movie. His mission is to bring all life in the world under his control.
Excellent. And he needed the Ring of Power to do that.
One ring to rule them all in Mordor on the Potomac. All right, good show, guys. It's been Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends, with Randy England, and last half hour of Better Caller, Nathan. Thanks, Nathan.
Good night, folks.
Worms.
Night.
Say worms.
Worms.
Worms. Worms.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel.
In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.